Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Penny.
And I'm Rinaldi.
And this is She-Hulk Cast, a podcast dedicated to the Disney Plus show, She-Hulk Attorney at Law.
This episode, we're covering Season 1, Episode 8, Ribbit and Ribbit.
And I want to welcome Rinaldi to the podcast. He has been a listener this whole season and reached out. And he has his own podcast called Marvelous Friends. And I recommend it. It's pretty great. He and three other people, Rob, Fergie, and Elise, just get on and talk about whatever Marvel news or shows are current at the time. And they're very passionate about it. They have some differing opinions. They give each other a hard time, but it's all very friendly and often very funny. I listened yesterday to the podcast where you were talking about Jessica Jones, and I thought it was so funny when your friend Fergie just like kept accusing Rob of hating women, and he's like, no.
So,
like,
fun fact, Rob and Fergie are married, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. That makes it so much funnier.
Yeah.
That's great. How long have you been doing Marvelous Friends?
We started right when COVID kind of took off and we were all stuck at home. And so it started off as kind of, hey, let's just do this for fun because we don't got nothing else to do. We stuck at home. And then it kind of evolved into, wow, we really have great chemistry. We really add something different to the Marvel fan space. Let's keep going with it and be consistent. And it's starting to grow. You know, it's starting to take off and we're starting to gain more listeners. And I'm proud of it. I'm proud of what me and my friends have accomplished so far. And we want to let more people know about it, including, you know, the Podcastica family. You know, if that's something you're interested in, check it out. Because, man, I'm just grateful to be just a part of something like this. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's fun. The Podcastica family, since you've mentioned that, I haven't talked about it much on this podcast, but I want to let listeners know that there's a Patreon community for Podcastica. And if you donate to the Patreon, you get access to exclusive content and also a members-only community that we have on Facebook that's really fun to be a part of. There's a lot of people who, you know, share our love of superheroes and science fiction and other genre shows, and we all talk back and forth. There's a bunch of different email threads going on. Rinaldi has been posting, like, a all-time list of Walking Dead episodes, which
are really my personal fun. You know, just like these are, if I could rank each one, this is how it would go.
Yeah, it's been fun reading them. And I'm sort of flabbergasted by the amount of content that you've written. I'm like, whoa, that's a lot of writing. it's 10 years worth of episodes.
Exactly.
Or 12?
It's 10, yeah. 10 to 12. And I mean, that I was doing that while recording Marvelous Friends. So, like, we would record an episode of Marvelous Friends, and then afterward, I would just try to figure out which one episodes do I like the most of Walking Dead and which ones do I like the least. And it was just a way to keep busy and stay sane during kind of the early parts of COVID.
Yeah. I'm excited about the end of the Walking Dead series. It's been really good so far, but this is not a Walking Dead podcast. This is a She-Hulk podcast. Right. So we're going to talk about the most recent episode of She-Hulk.
There is some crossover because one of the characters was on the Walking Dead, or a couple of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Stephen Coulter was Reg.
Yeah.
And Wrecker was, what was his name? Andrew? Tomas. Tomas. Yeah. That's right. The other guy was Andrew. Yeah, I always get excited when I see my favorite Walking Dead actors in other things. I got Paramount Plus just so I could watch Sonequa Martin-Green in Star Trek Discovery. And she's great in it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love her. She's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what did you think of this episode of She-Hulk, Ribbit and Rip It, just generally?
No, I really liked it. I really liked this episode. I thought the last one was okay. I didn't like it as much as you did, but I thought it was okay. But this eighth episode was like really great. You know, I enjoyed it a lot. There was a lot of humor that I really liked. There were some good action sequences, and I liked the chemistry between Daredevil and She-Hulk. I thought it was good, and I was hoping that they would get that part right, because I think them being two lawyers who are extremely opinionated and have their own self-discovery journeys, I figured these two would kind of click, you know. And so it was cool to see that. And it was just fun to see the little side characters just have their comedic moments, especially Mallory Book. Like, please don't get rid of her. Keep her on the show. Like, yeah, I feel like all the characters, even the parents, had little funny moments. So overall, I like this episode.
Yeah, I feel like the show, like this episode was the culmination of all the work they've been doing to set up everything all season. Mm-hmm. And this episode had it all. It was like, there's some romance, there's some action, there's some, you know, horrible misogyny, there's glamour, there was just a lot going on.
It's like all the elements coalesce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really great. There was a lot of breaking of the fourth wall in this episode. I don't know if I caught all of them, but we have a list, and let's just go back and forth. The first one being when she says, previously on my show, when it introduces the previously on segment, which I really loved. I thought that was a cute touch.
That was funny. It kind of, I like how it's very pointed and direct, the breaking of the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Because some shows, they kind of overdo it, but this one, it times it well.
Yeah. And then there was, I don't know if this was breaking the fourth wall or not, but she says, oh shit, when Leapfrog says that his suit was made by Luke Jacobson. And I couldn't tell if she was like talking to us. It wasn't completely clear. Yeah.
Well, she looked, looked at us. I don't know if she was talking to us, but she looked up at us and was like, oh no, like, so I don't know. It could be ambivalent, ambiguous.
Mm-hmm. Ambiguous. Yeah.
Oh, at the bar with Matt, we're all feeling this, right? It's not just me. And an eye roll about Todd's text. Yeah, that whole thing was, it was like, she didn't have Nikki, so I guess we're Nikki. The audience is Nikki at this point.
Yeah, I'm fine with being Nikki. Nikki is fab.
Yeah.
When she and Daredevil were fighting Leapfrog, and Daredevil was off doing his thing, she said, this guy's really kind of doing it for me.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Well, he's different than he's really different than these other guys she was with. I mean, he's actually a superhero that's like, I don't know. It's almost like he's a superhero that kind of just like he just puts one pant leg on and puts the other pant leg on, and it's like, all right, I gotta do this. Like, it's not like Bruce. It felt very sanctimonious. It's like, Jim, you need to be a hero, so. But I mean, another thing it's like that kind of popped up was just like, you guys are still here, you know, the end of the episode, you know, just how usually there's some kind of like conclusion that's like bittersweet, I guess. But this time it was just, we're just going to go to the gala. And it's like, really? There isn't like where's the bitterness? It's just all sweet. So I thought that was cool.
That was a good one. Yeah, she's like, wait, we're doing the gala? That doesn't feel right. Is next episode the finale? That was a really cute episode. And she said, or a cute moment, and she's like, this is the big twist, isn't it? But the question is it the kind of twist that's like, there's another Hulk, but this one's red? Or I'm getting fridged? And that was just like directly playing with the audience who's been like guessing what was coming down the line. And I assume fridged means like killed or canceled or something.
Yeah, killed or like maimed grievously. Yeah. I always wanted to use that word, grievously.
Grievous.
But I think this timing of the whole meta fourth wall break was different. I don't think she's ever done it towards the end of an episode.
Yeah.
Like, or I mean, there was one time where she said like the A plot meets the B plot, and that was kind of towards the end of an episode, but this was
pronounced. Also when she got served by the process server and she's like, well, that's kind of a bummer ending.
Yeah, she did.
I bet there's a fun tag. Yeah. And this episode, she went out of her way to say that the episode had already come to a satisfying conclusion, which is obviously talking about sex with Daredevil.
Yeah,
I think she had a really good time.
Yeah, she was. I guess she liked the screenwriters with this episode, as opposed to some of the earlier episodes. I'm surprised she hasn't even mentioned the writers like directly, but. I don't know if she did that in the comics. I never read She-Hulk comics.
She did.
Okay.
In the comics, she would call out the writers and sometimes the editors. She'd be like, in the John Byrne series, she'd be like, John, really? Like, right after I finished this other thing, you're throwing this at me? Like, she would sort of challenge him and criticize him. It was really funny. So I've been waiting for her to like call out Jessica Gao and be like, Jessica. But I don't know, maybe in the future. Maybe She-Hulk season 2, if we get one.
We might get one. We'll see. But I was worried when Nikki popped out of the corner of the room that she was gonna attack She-Hulk. Like she had concealed some special abilities, like, and no, I'm not a normal paralegal. I actually have, like, I'm actually enhanced or whatever. Because she's like jumping out, and then says, and then I forgot what she said, but she held out like just cosmetic stuff. I'm a stereotypical guy, like cosmetic stuff. But she just held that out.
Yeah, she had all these. She had these makeup brushes like between her fingers, so it looked like Wolverine. I was like, "Oh, that's like a little Wolverine joke."
I thought it was like a wand, like she's like a witch.
Yeah,
because like I saw on TikTok, my friend sent me this TikTok video about this theory that Nikki's a witch because she looked at the camera in one of the episodes. So
I went back. Kirk was talking about that last week, and I went back and watched that episode, that moment a couple of times, and I don't think she was looking at the camera. I think she was just rolling her eyes, and like at one point in the roll, she goes past the camera.
Yeah,
makes sense. And she was wearing just like stars; those weren't pentagrams. That makes sense. It's an interesting theory, though. I do want Nikki to have more depth to her. So if she were secretly powered, it would be interesting. But I don't think that they've revealed that yet.
I thought that, like, they were going to use Nikki to highlight that misogyny and like the contributions of misogyny can come from women in certain instances, you know, if they like use the kind of messaging from it to tear another woman down to pull themselves up. And because I thought about Agatha, and Agatha kind of used the perceptions of Wanda to get what she wanted from Wanda. So I was worried they were going to do that with Nikki. But thankfully, that did not happen.
Yeah. Oh, Agatha, one of my favorite MCU characters. I love her so much.
Yeah,
I want to sing it. Catherine Hahn is just brilliant. Oh, yeah, that's true. I have some of her music. I can't wait for the Agatha Harkness show. She gets her own show. It's going
to
be so cool.
Oh, you're looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
I'm hesitant. I don't know. We'll see. I'm not sure about it.
Yeah. At this point, I really trust Marvel. Like, they rarely let me down.
That's good.
Should we get into our main discussion points?
Yeah, I think we should.
Why don't you go first?
Okay. Jen just can't catch a break. You know, she can't catch a break. She is always in these very challenging, emotionally challenging and awkward situations. And this is, like, the most awkward an emotionally challenging situation that, like, man, I want to give her a hug, really. Like if there was some way I could jump into the show and give her a hug, because, you know, that video that Intelligentsia, you know, hacked into the system and broadcasted was awful. And it just kind of highlighted, kind of in my notes, I just highlighted how just what that means on a, I guess, a deeper mm-hmm. level, on a meta level. And like, you know, part one of just that point is, you know, Intelligentsia, they're offended that She-Hulk is like this public figure. You know, she's someone that's getting attention away from other heroes. You know, there's all these news stories on her. There's all these discussion points on TV about her. She has these high profile cases. And it's just, there's a lot of jealousy from a very vain standpoint. And it's funny because mm-hmm. Titania was like that. But like, these Intelligentsia people are doing this. They're like reacting the same way Titania is. But then they're trying to yeah. sound machismo and like macho. But they're doing the same thing
and as Titania. And they're way meaner than Titania. I mean,
yeah.
hacking her phone and then publishing it in front of a room full of her, you know, colleagues and family is cruel. And they called her a slut in that introduction. They're like, you know, we're here to tell you the truth about She-Hulk. And they yeah. accused her of stealing her powers from the real Hulk, which, yeah. you know, she didn't do. And it's like jealousy plus misogyny plus like cruelty. Yeah. And yeah, it's gross. It's really gross, but it's not that dissimilar from the way incels online react to any woman in power. They hate women in power. They just hate them.
Yeah. I mean, they use, I think, these kind of perceptions of women being in sexual relationships as a bludgeon. And it doesn't make sense because Daredevil, if you read the comics, like, he's in a lot of sexual relationships. And no one's like, oh, Daredevil, he's a slut. Like, no one's saying that about Daredevil. He's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, she's a grown woman, you know, and you have to respect people's choices, whatever they are. But obviously, yeah. Intelligentsia doesn't think along those lines. Yeah. What was it?
No. I said, yeah, I mean, it's not like she's having sex with people that don't want to have sex with her. It's, you know, they're all consenting and adult. And there was nothing like predatory about the way she had sex with that Josh guy. I mean, very above board.
I just get frustrated when they feel so threatened by her. Unless like incels is like she's not having sex with them. So they
yeah,
that's probably what it is. Like she's ignoring them. So they feel a certain kind of frustration. And then on top of that, it's like, oh, you weakened the Hulk. Like, you made the Hulk weak. Where is he? He's gone. You know, because yeah. we know he's off-world. Because in Endgame, he was this kind of celebrity. And he was very active in being a hero. And now in this series, he's not. So it's almost like she's getting blamed for that.
Yeah, which it has nothing to do with her, obviously. You know, he's on some other planetary mission something about Sakaar. We don't really know what he's up to.
Nah, that's a long game yeah. thing. But and I also wanted to add yeah. how Sam Wilson kind of went through. Well, I think what Jen went through is worse. But Sam Wilson also went through some kind of, you know, mistreatment and cruelty from hate groups. You know, in terms of yeah. race. You know, because he's taking on yeah. this role from Steve Rogers, and it's like, you're the reason Steve Rogers is gone and you're not fit to be Captain America. And I'm like, Steve just wanted to be with Peggy. So that's his yeah, choice.
He aged out. it's like Menudo. Yeah. You don't fit the suit anymore. You can't be in Menudo. Sam Wilson and the actor, he got a lot of crap like outside of the MCU, you know, from people in real
Anthony
life.
Mackie,
they were
right?
like,
Anthony yeah. Mackie himself. Yeah. Yeah, did Tatiana Maslany get death threats? I haven't heard anything about that. I hope not.
I haven't either. I think there's more been online people complaining about the existence of a She-Hulk TV show. They're not so much targeting her as they are like, we shouldn't, like, female superheroes are not my cup of tea, so there shouldn't be any. Like, there yeah. are people who just don't like there being female, and they think that somehow like having a show about She-Hulk means like less shows about men superheroes or something, but like there's tons of stuff about men out there. Like, you guys are not short of content.
There's three whole seasons of Daredevil.
Yeah.
So people are overreacting.
Yeah. Yeah, there's Daredevil, there's Punisher, there's Luke Cage. And even to date in the MCU, right, we've had a Loki show. We had Falcon and Winter Soldier. We had Moon Knight. Like, there's been plenty of men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you're right. Jen can't catch a break.
I do want to add real quick. Hopefully I'm not going too long with this point. But
no, go for it.
I did want to add that, and you mentioned this earlier in earlier episodes, but they tried the physical attack and it didn't work. So this is like the ultimate culmination of attack at the heart, you know, not the flesh, but the heart, you know, the soul of a person. And unfortunately, it worked to perfection and it was more successful than Leapfrog's plan. You know, Leapfrog wanted to, overpower She-Hulk because she didn't want to go along with his plan, even though, as any rational attorney would do, is not go with Leapfrog's plan. So, so it's like Leapfrog's plan failed miserably, just like their earlier plan with the Wrecking Crew. But this one, it just like it hit right below the belt.
It hurt her, and it sent her into a rage that had. You know, at the end of the episode, she's standing there with like those red laser sight things on her, like all those red dots. And she's like, you can tell she's having a hard time containing her rage. You know, she's like, like growling and like breathing really heavily. Like she's really, really worked up. And I have in my notes, like, remember her Hulk physiology amps up her rage, right? When she starts feeling angry, the Hulk body is like, anger, yes, and like goes with it. So she was like, I think that I couldn't tell if the room was red or if she was seeing red, but it was a really good metaphor either way that like she was so angry, like everything she saw was just like red in that room after she attacked the screens. Yeah, I think it was like the alarm lighting, like somebody pulled the fire alarm or something when she attacked those screens. And I don't know why throwing the room into red light would make it safer, but that's what they did. That's my first point is my always first point, which is lawyer stuff. We didn't have a ton of lawyer stuff in this episode, but there was a little bit of a talk about conflict of interest and waivers of conflict of interest. And last week we had a specific question about conflict of interest, so I think people might be a little bit interested in it. The way it usually works at a law firm is the law firm gets, you know, a new client that wants them to take on their work, and then they do a conflicts check to make sure that there's nobody that they're already representing that would be in conflict with the new client. So, like, let's say that, you know, company A wants to sue company B, and they go to, like, GLK and H, and they're like, we want to sue company B, and we heard you're great lawyers. GLK and H looks through their database, and they're like, oh, we represented company B, but it was, like, 7 years ago, and it was on an employment matter, and this is product liability, and so that would be okay, and they would take the case. Okay. But if they were currently representing company B, they would have to go to company B and say, company A wants us to sue you, you know, would you sign a waiver and let us take the case? Company B in that case would probably not sign the waiver because you don't want your lawyers to represent your opponents. In fact, what a lot of really big companies do is they send a little bit of work to like lots of different high-level law firms so that all those law firms can't represent their opponents. So they create conflicts on purpose to make sure that like all the best law firms are on their team and then they can't, you know, represent against them. Another way you get a conflict of interest is if the individual attorney has some kind of financial interest or family interest in either the opponent of the client or the client. And then what a law firm usually does is they call it, and this is probably racist, a Chinese firewall. Which is basically like a virtual like barrier between that attorney and the case so that the conflict of interest doesn't affect the case. But that attorney is not allowed to like know anything about the case, be involved in the case. If it's a big law firm, that's really easy to do. They're just like in a different area.
Are these kind of ethics questions? Well, I guess not questions, but situations. Are they like enforced or is it a matter of the opposing counsel making sure that the ethics boxes are checked appropriately? Or is there some kind of larger body that's monitoring for these types of violations?
Every state has some version of a bar association that oversees the ethics of all the attorneys that are licensed in that state.
Okay.
Why it's still state to state and not federal, I don't know. It gets started by a complaint. Like, they don't just, like, randomly go around looking for something to enforce.
Okay.
But anyone can file a complaint. And a lot of times, opposing counsel will. And they'll say, you know, and sometimes it comes up with judges. They'll be like, this judge can't hear this case because she owns stock in, you know, this client's company and, they have to recuse themselves. Or, like, if the judge is related to somebody who's in the case, they have to recuse themselves.
So what if, like, a judge was, like, he recently married Eugene Patillo's, like, second cousin or something? Then would Matt Murdock petition? Hey, you married his second cousin last week, so recuse yourself.
Yeah. Probably, but there's also strategic considerations. Like, you have to make a judgment call whether or not the judge is more likely to side with the other side because of the conflict. Like, some lawyers are okay with the conflict. They're like, oh, I think it's all right. And some of them aren't. So it's all like when it gets to that kind of thing, like second cousin marriage, it's like fuzzy and it's all subjective. Okay. And you have to use good judgment.
Has to be with
there's a whole class. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's a whole class you have to take. Everybody who goes to law school has to take an ethics class. And you just go through these kind of scenarios like day after day and try to figure out, like, is it a conflict or is it not? Is it an ethical violation or is it not? Okay. I have run into a couple of things in my career where I was like, oh, I can't work on that because I have a personal relationship with someone. My brother worked for a client of the company of the firm, and I had to, and I just asked to not work on that client. They were like, "It's probably not a conflict," and I was like, "But like, could I just not work on that client?" And they were like, "Yeah, that's fine," because it made me uncomfortable. I was really early in my career. I was like a second year attorney, and I was like really nervous about the rules and everything. So I was like, "I don't want to break a rule." Now I'm a little bit more laid back. Yeah.
So was that like the ethics class? Did they have this kind of like fire and brimstone, like follow these ethical principles, follow them?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
But it was more like there's an ethics exam that every lawyer has to take in addition to the bar exam. And a lot of it was sort of teaching the test.
Okay.
Just like so that you could pass the ethics test. And a lot of the stuff that the ethics rules deal with, like, you're so far away from that when you're a law student, because it's things like, if you're a judge, you can't take money from certain types of people. And I'm like, if I ever become a judge, I'll just read these rules again. Like, that's going to be 20 years from now. I'm not going to remember this stuff. That was like what most of the exam was about. It's too bad because I think ethics issues are really interesting and I wanted the class to be deeper and to really go into it, but it was more like, what would a, you know, bar association find in this situation? And in terms of punishment, you get the big punishment that they can dole out is, disbarring you. And that means you can't practice law in that state anymore. And then once you get disbarred in one state, if you're admitted in other states, you have to disclose that. And then that's on your record. And like the next time somebody complains about you, it'll be even easier for you to get disbarred. The other thing is if it's like rises to the level of fraud or something, there could be criminal charges or you could get sued for malpractice.
Okay.
Those are sort of the stick.
Wait,
to enforce
those rules. If
you're
disbarred, is that it? You can't.
I think you can get readmitted.
So you can't get
after after a while. Like, you have to sort of like repent and show remorse and all that stuff, and then reapply. And depending on how bad whatever you did was, you either get admitted or not. Or you can go try to practice in another state, take the bar exam again or whatever.
So was Holloway's
bar exam's awful.
So was Holloway's reaction realistic to you as a attorney?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Any like really big valuable client gets complete red carpet, white glove treatment at a law firm. Like, so if it's funny because in the comics, Eugene Petilio's father is like poor, and that's a big part of his character arc. I was reading up on him. And, but apparently in this universe, in the MCU, he's wealthy and he's a really important client. So, you know, his loser, spoiled brat son gets, you know, the advantage of that extra special treatment. Yeah. I've seen that a lot. Like, a really valuable client, like, the firm will take on, like, garbage work around the side of that client to, like, make them happy. Like, oh, my wife's, you know, jewelry business needs an attorney. Like, okay.
it's like,
yeah,
okay.
Just to keep them happy. I wanted to comment that Jen's suits look so much better now.
Yeah.
Her, that boxy gray suit was horrible, but the new Luke Jacobson suits look fantastic on her. They're fitted really well. They look expensive. It's great.
She really did look like an NFL player that,
yeah,
just that was, keeps getting a DUI. Like, she really did. Like, I'm a huge sports fan, and so I've seen that in real life. NFL players in court looking like that.
Yeah. Like, uncomfortable. The suit doesn't fit. Like, yeah, it was pretty funny. That was a good comment. Mallory, of course, always dressed impeccably.
Mallory and Nikki, goodness gracious.
Just, yeah.
Dressed to the nines.
Yes. Yeah. And beautiful women. Yeah.
And Pug is no slouch either.
No, he is quite handsome. He has sort of mesmer eyes. Like,
yeah.
His eyes are a really light color, and it makes you want to, like, really look into them. Yeah. It's no surprise. Everybody on the show is good looking. It's Hollywood.
Exactly.
The only other lawyer concept that was really talked about was one for them, one for us. Matt Murdock brought that up at the bar, and it's a concept that a lot of lawyers start in the field with, is like, oh, I'm going to do a ton of pro bono work, and I'm just going to use corporate clients to, you know, pay my way, but I'll do all this pro bono work. The truth is, when you work at a law firm, especially when you're a junior attorney, you're working from like 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day. You do not have time for pro bono work, volunteering, dinner, washing your clothes. Like, it, your life becomes just about the office, and you're just at the office all the time. You eat two or three meals a day in the office. You get your dry cleaning delivered to the office. You know, they bring in massage therapists to the office. Like, anything to get you to stay and churn out more billable hours.
And then that profit goes to the partners from the billable hours?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dang. That's a rough man. Jen just needs a... Can she go back to that retreat? Because, like, this profession is cutthroat.
It's brutal. Yeah. It really is. Especially when you're junior. Like, when you're lower on the you know, ladder of lawyerdom, you get pushed around and bossed around a lot. And it's unpleasant. And yelled at. There's a lot of partners who think it's okay to just, like, yell at you. I mean, there's just really bad behavior in the legal. Yeah. I hated it.
Oh,
all right. Enough of lawyer stuff.
Yes. Greg, I'm like a nerd when it comes to this. I always like to ask questions. So hopefully we did not bore our listeners.
Yeah. Sorry, listeners. We'll talk about more Marvel stuff now. What's your next discussion point, Rinaldi?
So my next discussion point is a very Marvel-y discussion point. It's the appearance of Daredevil in a Phase 4 of the MCU. We've had Matt Murdock in Spider-Man No Way Home, but that was it. We didn't have his alter ego. So now we have not only Matt Murdock in She-Hulk, but we also have his alter ego, Daredevil. And it was not empty fan service. So this was, he was really weaved into the story as an element of Jen's, I guess, current legal situation. And I thought it was incredibly interesting just seeing their chemistry, seeing how they're working together. But it starts with them being, you know, having animosity, but then it eventually leads to working together. So it was cool that this whole thing was a journey that started with them as opposing attorneys, then opposing superheroes, and then superheroes working together. And then attorneys kind of having a meeting of the minds at the legalese. So I thought that whole journey was really cool. Oh, and then two lovers having a romantic meeting of the heart, I guess, and then the walk of shame in the Daredevil costume because he's in L.A. He in New York. He can't, like, catch a train. So
yeah. I loved the walk of shame moment. I thought it was such a funny flip of the concept of the walk of shame. For listeners, if you don't know what the walk of shame refers to, it's generally refers to a woman coming home from having sex with somebody in, like, her cocktail dress and high heels from the night before. And it's early in the morning and her makeup is smudged and she's usually carrying her shoes in the cliche. And because high heels hurt and you want to take them off the next day. And it's a concept that's been used, like, so much when applied to women, and it's hardly ever applied to men. And to see it applied to not just any man, but Daredevil was so delightful. And that he was carrying his boots and walking barefoot just killed me. It was such a beautiful little detail.
Yeah, and I think, like, it kind of fit that he went to her house. She didn't go to his house, you know. And maybe that's a very pragmatic and way to look at it, you know. But my apologies if I am being too pragmatic about it. But, I mean, that's what it is, you know. He's in her city. She's not in his city. So it's almost like he's, because of the position that he's in due to the situation, he's adopting something that women have had to deal with a normal amount of rage, you know, thinking about episode one where Jen said that to Bruce, you know, it's like he has to take on that role and he's just kind of sheepish about it, you know?
Yeah. He did have his head down. But I mean, his helmet was on, so it's not like his identity was out there. I did enjoy that this version of Daredevil was a little more devil may care and lighthearted than the Daredevil TV show version. Yeah. I've heard from a few people that they think that the Matt Murdock in this universe is a variant and that the Daredevil TV show is like a different Earth. Matt Murdock is literally different, but that's just a theory.
I think it's just a situation. I mean, he's dealing with a fraud. He ain't dealing with like a serious criminal. That's threatening his loved ones, you know. I think even in phase four, if Daredevil was confronting someone that threatened someone he cared about, or even threatened Jen, he would be more serious and, you know, angry and whatever. But you know, we'll see. He's just brought in to Marvel Disney Plus, so we'll see what the final word is on that.
Yeah, I'm really hoping they'll bring in the rest of those characters. Jessica Jones, who I adore, and Luke Cage, and maybe even Punisher, although I never watched that show. It was just a little too dark for me.
Yeah. I did like about Punisher was they did explore his emotional side. It wasn't just him cutting people's throats out. I want to see those people too. I don't know if they'll recast Iron Fist. I know the actor that played him, a lot of people didn't like him. I feel like, I know he doesn't get mentioned a lot, but there are so many Power Man and Iron Fist comics. It would just be cool to just, you know, bring that partnership to Disney Plus as well. But
yeah, I think the issue with that show was the writing and not the acting.
Yeah, they had bad writers. Season two, they got a different writing team. Season two was much better.
Maybe I'll watch season two.
Yeah, you should. It's better. Maybe that's not saying much because season one wasn't good. But hopefully, I think with the right writers, that's what I think. I'm thinking that they got to get the right writers for that character, and it'll succeed. But no, I think they should bring them all in, and maybe in Daredevil Born Again, they might make cameos. You know, maybe those characters will cameo, and I hope they just kind of, we get to know his past, you know, or we re-examine it, because I think it's a good way to connect with this character, because he's, you know, he's been through a lot, so.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the scene in the bar in The Legal Ease, because he was sort of subtly mentoring her about becoming a superhero, but in a much gentler way than Bruce did. As you said, Bruce was like, you need to help the Earth, you know? Yeah. You have the power. What else are you going to do? But he was like, he gave her her motto. In the comics, this is sort of her motto, which is Jen Walters can help people when society fails them, and She-Hulk, or can help people with the law when society fails them, and She-Hulk can help people when the law fails them. And it really sparked something in her. And it made me think that superheroes need a buddy system. Like every new superhero should get an older superhero to help them, kind of like Jedis and Padawan learners, like just like a, you know, an apprentice superhero to follow around the master superhero for a while and learn the ropes. That would be helpful. I
definitely agree with that, because it would just make, it would just maximize the impact that that each individual superhero can make, you know, and avoid a lot of unforced errors, like errors that you did not need to make. But like, on that note, it was weird because Daredevil's motto from at least the Marvel Netflix series was Matt Murdock steps in when the law fails to help people. Daredevil steps in when where the law steps off.
Okay.
No, picks up. Dang it. Picks up. Okay. Matt Murdock picks up where the law falls short, and then Daredevil picks up where the law, dang it. It's something to that effect. Ah, gosh, dang it. Maybe in notes I'll get it right when we get to notes, but it's something basically along the lines of Matt Murdock stepping in when people need the law, and then Daredevil stepping in when the law can't do anything. That's essentially what it is. And so it is kind of funny that his motto is very similar to hers. It's, there's a slight variation.
They have a lot of parallels just because they're both superheroes and lawyers. He's just much further along in the journey than she is.
Exactly. You know,
she's only just now starting to own her She-Hulk-ness. Right. This was the first time she said She-Hulk smash. Like she and she was having fun being She-Hulk in her like new awesome super suit for the first time. Like before this, she's always done it sort of like begrudgingly. And this time when she got that call from Leapfrog and decided to go help him, she sort of got like a smile on her face about it. Like, oh, it's a chance to be She-Hulk and do something, and you know, and she paused and went back for the super suit because she's like, I'm being a superhero now. It was very satisfying for me.
Yeah, I think it's because I think part of it was because he's a client, so it's like I can help my client as Jen Walters and She-Hulk. So it's like it's almost like a perfect fit for this type of, I guess, new approach.
This until she finds out that Leapfrog is actually the villain in this situation.
Yeah, that's that was really funny. But like, it's crazy to think, cause Daredevil season one, Matt was a mess, man. I'm like, I feel like anybody who's, you know, like people should listen to Marvelous Friends, The People versus Rinaldi. That's the title of our episodes, because I criticize season one Matt Murdock very harshly because I feel like he made more mistakes than Jen. But kind of like the meta commentary of this show, like he got a pass. Like he got a pass. But Jen, it's like, oh, this is what happens when women get powers and like this and that. And I'm like, Matt did far worse when he started off. And did not have a mentor and had a friend, people in his life that were wanted to give him advice, and he didn't take it.
Yeah.
But at least Jen is willing to kind of open her mind to, oh, wait, let me see what if the, this Daredevil approach will work.
Yeah. She is very open to new ideas. When people give them to her, it always, she has like a moment of resistance, and then she's like, actually, like she sort of takes it in and thinks about it. Look how much she opened up at that retreat. She really took on what they were all saying to her and incorporated it into herself. It's very inspiring in a way, because people get stuck in their own ways and don't want to change. And sometimes you need to.
She has to get stuck, though. Before she gets stuck in situations, she's like very opinionated. But when she's like, okay, like, I literally can't get a text message from Josh. All right, maybe I should go to this meeting that Emil is hosting, because I ain't got no bars on my phone.
They had great chemistry, the two of them, Daredevil and She-Hulk, Jen and Matt, and very quippy banter, which I really enjoyed. I know you have a couple of great lines, but my favorite was, "My ass remains unwhooped."
Yeah, that was funny.
That was a really good one. And she was like clearly put out by it. The whole thing was very cute. I also loved, it's very daring to use ketchup and mustard as your color scheme.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't like the gold helmet.
No, not at all.
I think it looks weird.
I mean, I feel like it's a reference to like his earlier costume in the comics. But that was like neon yellow and red.
Yeah.
Neon yellow and like a reddish brown. I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
At least they tried to make it look better, because it's gold. Gold is better than neon yellow. And it was like a dark red instead of like this reddish brown junk. They tried. Yeah. They tried to make it better. Well, Daredevil's blind. He didn't even know what colors they are anyway. He just like, as long as it protects him from, you know, physical punishment, he don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, he even made a crack about that, like criticizing a blind man's clothes that's low.
That was pretty funny.
And then he's like, "I am wearing pants, right?" Like,
or in the courtroom, he was like, "Yeah, I got lost trying to find the parking lot." And I wonder if people looked up, like, "Did he drive himself?" And no, my driver got lost. It's okay, guys.
Yeah. Although he could probably drive with his like Daredevil abilities. Is he considered
he could. I don't know if he could do it well. I don't know if he could do it well, but he could do it.
Yeah.
Functionally.
Yeah. Is he considered a powered person? Like, is his, you know, smell-o-vision, echolocation, whatnot, is that just human adaptation to being blind? Or is it meant to be understood as, like, some kind of supernatural, like, extra power?
No, it's an actual power. Like, because in the Netflix series, he can hear up to, like, 5-6 miles away, and I don't think any blind person that's practicing their hearing can accomplish that, because that's a long 5 miles away is seriously long, and then smelling things from like across the room or multiple floors in an apartment building, you can smell cheap cologne. I'm like, how do you do that? I don't think their dogs could dogs do that. Smell cheap cologne from like 5 floors down in an apartment building?
I don't know. Maybe bloodhounds.
Yeah, probably bloodhounds. So he's basically a bloodhound, but a human.
I mean, like, they have those cadaver dogs, right, that they use to try to find bodies that are buried, either like in concrete or rubble or even just under the ground. The dogs can somehow smell that there's a body, and they just, like, they're trained, they just go lie in that spot, and then directly underneath them, the law enforcement finds a body. It's really amazing what they can do.
Actually, Daredevil did that. It was a frozen body, and he was able to smell it and find it.
Impressive.
Yeah, someone that is a murder victim, obviously. The funny thing about the whole joke, because I think he was like, "Yeah, I just hear really good," because Jennifer was kind of confused by his original explanation of his powers. So he's just like, "Yeah, I just hear really good."
Yeah.
And I just feel like that was kind of a dig at like diehard Daredevil fans that kind of like because he's such a popular character. They're just like, yeah, he's so cool. He can do all these things. And I'm like, well, he is a cool character. I like him a lot, but he just hear and smell really good. You know, he just, you know, yeah. it's almost like we're seeing it from Jen's point of view. And even some fans in the Marvel community that maybe, like, I know a lot of Jessica Jones fans that don't really care for Daredevil, you know? So I think it's kind of a fun way to look at Daredevil through different eyes, as opposed to the typical Marvel fans that are big fans of Matt Murdock and Daredevil. Especially when Jen kept looking at the camera. She kept looking, like, who is this guy? Like, and it's like, I'm like, as a fanboy, like, oh my gosh, it's Daredevil. She's just like, ah, this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, she asked him at one point if his name is the Gold Devil. They just had great chemistry. And the fighting scenes were really fun. I loved that her Hulk clap was the thing that did him in, because, of course, the vibrations in the air, like, overwhelmed his hearing system. Exactly. And I kind of wish that when they talked right after that, that he had been yelling a little bit. You know, the way that you do when your hearing is blocked.
That would have made so much sense. I wish they did done
that. That would have been really funny. Cool. Yeah.
The weird Missed thing about that whole thing, because I think this is my last point for this point. That's kind of weird. My last point for this point. The weird thing about that whole thing was, like, I feel like I'm worried there's going to be some fans out there that are going to be like, oh my gosh, how did Daredevil lose this fight? He's so cool. Why did he lose? And I think they did a good job of highlighting what you just pointed out. And so, I don't know. It just feels like She-Hulk is being blamed for, like, some of these male heroes. You know, they're in situations where there's, you know, we're exploring different sides of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some people view that as weak, you know, weakness. And I think it's different than criticizing maybe the writing. Like, because I feel a certain type of way about some of the writing for these male characters. Like, yeah, I wish these male characters were written better, but that criticism should not be blamed at She-Hulk, the character. Like, you know, that should be, I should be blaming Kevin Feige because he's the head of Marvel Studios, you know, and ironically, he's a white man, you know. Is why are we blaming women for this? Like, we should blame the appropriate, like, and it's the same thing with Daredevil and She-Hulk. They're at odds with one another, but then they realize the source of their acrimony is this privileged white man called Leapfrog. Like, he's the culprit. It's not
She-Hulk. He's the problem.
He's the problem. So I thought that was clever by Jessica Gao to kind of put all that together.
Yeah. Let's talk about Leapfrog. That was one of my points anyway, so let's just go there and talk about him a little bit.
That was my third point, too.
This show has done a good job of showing a theme about, like, rich people just have all these privileges, right? Like, there's just, it's a different world when you're rich, right? There's that Todd guy. He's apparently got a lot of money, and we don't really know how he has his money. I assume it's like tech, but who knows? Maybe he built, like, Eugene.
He might have built an
app. Yeah. Something like that. He's a real tool. I thought the him referring to the lily pad as his famous hideout was hilarious. Like, you don't want a hideout that's famous, you dummy.
He said famous if it's secret hideout. How do you have a famous secret hideout? That don't make no...
And then he has those giant neon letters. Like, it says the lily pad on the roof. Like, he's just an idiot. And, you know, I am kind of curious to know how he got Luke to make him a super suit in the first place, because Luke is apparently very picky about clients, and I have trouble believing that he would have met this guy and been like, oh yeah, I'll make you a suit. Like, Eugene Petilio is a dumbass.
Maybe
I thought Luke was picky.
He buttered up Luke. Maybe he buttered him up saying, man, you're like one of the greatest creative minds in the world. And I'd be honored.
Yeah, or just threw a lot of money at him. Just, like, so much money.
I don't know if Luke cared about money. He got an ego. If you stroke his ego, that's my theory, but maybe it could be money. He has a business to run, so maybe he paid him extra. But I don't know. To me, it just seemed like he stroked his ego. I think he said, you're the greatest fashion mind in history. And he, Luke was just like, well, you know, that is plausible. That is true. What can I do for you, young man? I love a super suit.
Yeah. I mean, I would love a super suit. But of course, he couldn't use it accurately and blew himself up. And what an idiot. I'm hoping that they make him pay for... Yeah. Yeah. What an idiot.
Wait, you're saying you're hoping he can pay for... Sorry.
I'm hoping, you know... So they did, Jen did a lot of damage in this episode, right? There was like, she destroyed cars and the parking garage and that building where the lily pad was. And I'm just hoping that like all that somehow ends up getting billed to the Patilio family and not Jen.
I think they got billed. I definitely
I enjoy his tagline, Ribbit and Rip It. It's hilarious. And that he yelled at one point, no shame in retreat, and just like took off. He's just he's a coward. He's a dork. You know, he has paid friends. He called those henchmen his friends, but they all work for his dad. They don't even like him.
Well, they're not.
They don't want to be called tadpoles. Yeah.
They're goons.
Oh, they're goons. That's right.
Henchmen would have embraced his vision.
That's right.
They just want.
Jen called them hench goons. Hench goons.
She split them. She's like, all right, fine, I'll compromise. Hench goons. It's like, no, Jen.
Hench goons.
They're goons.
Yeah. Yeah, they did a good job sort of showing, like, different types of wealthy, like, child men, right? There's Eugene, and then there's Todd with his whole, like, you know, buying stolen artifacts and, oh, I have the paperwork. I don't know if you watch the John Oliver Last Week Tonight show on HBO. But he just did a whole episode about stolen art in sort of Western museums and the history of how especially the British and pretty much all the colonial countries, Spain, France, Portugal, the UK, have just like gone all over the world, like stealing art from other countries. And it's blatant that they have this stolen art, and they're like, oh no, we have to keep it. We're safeguarding it for the people of that country. Like, they have all these, like, bogus reasons why they have to keep the art. And, I was just thinking about that. This was also a thing that came up in Black Panther, right? Killmonger.
Yeah.
Takes back the Wakandan, whatever it was, weapon from that museum. Yeah. And
he
calls them out on it.
The woman said it was from, I forget which African nation it was from, but I think it was, she said it was from Tanzania, and then he was like, no, this is Wakanda. And she's like, pardon me? And it's like, no, this is Wakanda. You stole it.
I think the British Museum should do a series of exhibits of just stolen art. They should show it in the museum, and then ship it home, and they should just do it with like every like category of stolen art they have. I think it would be like the best way to restore those things. They could have one last hurrah in Great Britain, and then the art could go home and people would be happy. But that'll never happen. I'm not in charge of the world. I was very curious that Todd said he did a junior year abroad or study abroad in Wakanda. I was like, wasn't Wakanda hidden and closed? Like, I don't believe that Todd did study abroad there. He looks 30-ish. So
he's probably just lying because he would have been roughly my age. Nah, Wakanda was closed off. He's just lying.
Yeah. And then he does the Wakanda forever. And she's like, that makes me uncomfortable.
That was pretty funny. It made me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I was like, don't do
like,
that.
Dude, no. No. And he says the most disrespectful thing ever. He says, nobody's collecting African shit like me. I'm like, oh, I hate you. I hate you so much.
I might have struck him in the face as a man. I don't know. Maybe.
I really enjoyed her response to him, which was just like, no. And she just like shoves the table and she's out of there. Sure.
She ran away. She was like, no. Like, I don't know.
I'm billing you for the whole hour. Yeah.
The humor in this show has been inconsistent for me, but in this episode, it was working. Like, every single scene, it was, including that one. Her just running off.
The restaurant they met at, the restaurant they met at was called Hoof and Fleur. And I was like, oh, that just sounds horrible. Like, is it like... Hoof makes me think horse, even though I know other animals have hooves. I'm like, are they going to serve them horse meat? Like, what? I don't know.
It just seemed gross. Some weird luxury food for super rich people, I guess, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe it's one of those places. I mean, Todd's clearly a super rich.
Yeah. I mean, he dropped a mill, and then he kept saying it, a mill, a mill, a mill. I once went on a date with a guy who... tried to impress me by ordering expensive wine. And he did it by asking the waitress, like, oh, what wine do you have that's around the $200 mark? And I was so grossed out by it that I called him Tom 200 for, like, the next 2 years and told the story often.
Wow.
It was really tacky. Just so tacky. He was awful in other ways as well. So that's why that didn't work out.
I made the pug face.
Yeah.
I'll get to that in my notes, but he made an awkward face in response to some awkward dialogue by a misogynistic man.
So the only other big point I have is just to talk about the gala. How about you?
Nah, you got Leapfrog. That was my third point, but I did have some quotes.
Let's do those. Yeah.
Because I feel like the whole thing with Leapfrog was connected to Luke because Jen didn't want to lose access to Luke's fashion brilliance, as Luke would say.
Yep.
And he had some really funny lines to Jen as Jen was trying to navigate this whole situation with Leapfrog and still get really nice clothes. He said, you know, I do not make suits that malfunction. Like, he emphasized malfunction as if, like, that word has no place in his business. Like, malfunction is not even, like, it almost felt like he was grossed out saying that word. Then he was like, goodbye, tragedy. And then as Jen was struggling with the door... And then in court, after Leapfrog basically sabotaged Jen's entire case by being an idiot, Jen's like, Luke, like she's like a little kid trying to beg for toys on Christmas. She's like, Luke. And then Luke is like, yes, clown. Like, and then she's like, come on, can I be a client again? And he's like, Jennifer. No, I hate you now. Like, and he just walks off. It was just pretty funny.
He is excessively mean, but I do think that that's a fair parody of fashion people.
Yeah.
There's a lot of meanness. Like, he's like, try not to get bloated to her. It was like, just unnecessarily mean.
I still think it's funny. I feel like he was good in this episode. I feel like his other appearances, it was kind of flat because it felt like you kept thinking about Edna Mode. Insane. Yeah. And it was like, in my head, I'm like, I know Edna Mode. I've known her since I was a kid. When Incredibles came out, I was in middle school. I even thought about dressing up as Edna Mode for Halloween.
Awesome.
Luke, you are no Edna Mode. Like, that's what I kept thinking. But at least it's in this episode, he was better.
Yeah.
For me.
He was funny in this episode, whereas before I was like, he's kind of a tired cliche, but in this episode he delivered. He had good lines and good timing. Her super suit looks awesome. So, you know.
Yeah, that was pretty good. It's better good than job. Sam Wilson's suit. He needed to find Luke. Sam, go get Luke.
Yeah. Oh, Luke and Shuri should collaborate.
Oh, that would be amazing.
She has great taste. Her fashion is awesome.
Wait, did Shuri make
time.
That suit? Did she? Because he said he got it from Wakanda. So who made it?
Yeah.
Which one?
I assume it was Shuri or somebody working with Shuri, right? She's in charge of technology for that for that country.
Yeah. Shuri needed to find Luke. I agree with you.
Yeah. So the gala, or do you have more quotes?
No, that's it. I'm done. Yeah. All my points are done.
So the gala had some great moments, like her parents being there was really cute. Her mother thinking she was going to get cold was hilarious. The MC tells an incredibly awful joke about female lawyers. And he says they're educated, accomplished, beautiful, and doing everything regular lawyers do except backwards and in high heels, which is an old joke about Ginger Rogers and how she's just as talented of a dancer as Fred Astaire, except she had to do it backwards and in high heels. And saying that about women lawyers, like, I know he thought he was being clever, but it was just kind of offensive. And being asked, what's it like being a female lawyer, is the worst. Every woman lawyer I know has gone through something like that. We've all been called lady lawyers, girl lawyers, or like, oh, are you the secretary? And it's like, no. I had one guy I was negotiating against ask me if I was new. And, cause he just didn't like what I was saying. And I said, do you mean girl? And all of my coworkers who were on the phone just started cracking up. They're like, I can't believe you said that. They're all like sending me chats, you know, like, I can't believe you just said that to that guy. He's such a tool. Like, they were all like supportive, but yeah, I got a lot of, oh, you sound too pretty to be a lawyer, like on the phone.
And I'd be whoa,
like,
oh, wow.
Like, shut up. Like, it's so irritating.
See, I feel like my eyes are being opened.
Yeah. And it happens so often that, like, I don't even always register it. I'm like, misogyny, next. Like, I just sort of, okay. And when we get together, like, other professional women have such similar stories that I'm like, this is everywhere, right? Like,
yeah.
Lady doctor and, you know, lady lawyer and lady accountant. Like, oh, you're too pretty to do math. Like, all that kind of garbage is, it just happens all the time. It's like noise.
See, I'm a sports fan. So there was a player who was being interviewed by a female reporter in the locker room, which I always like, it's kind of awkward. Like if you're, cause some female reporters have been like, yeah, I'm in the locker room. There's this guy just in a towel.
Yeah.
And that's already awkward. And then you're not taking me seriously as a journalist. It's like, what the heck? But in this particular instance, the player was like, you know, why are you asking me these types of questions? Like, you keep asking me, like, about strategy. Like, why do you want to know about routes? Why do you want to know about the plays? Like,
she's like, because that's substantive sports journalism.
Yeah, she's like, the fans want to know about that stuff because they think, you know, they think it's a key to helping the team win. So I need to ask those questions. And he's like, okay, I don't think women should be asking about plays and routes. And it was like, yeah, it was pretty bad. It was very bad. And it was like a whole thing. And then he kind of gave a half-hearted apology because his agent was like, he really apologized.
Yeah, so it's that just is like not okay.
Dealing with that, you know, in the sports world, you know, that's another
thing. Yeah, women sports fans get a lot of like, oh, are you here because your boyfriend likes the team? Like, they get a lot of disrespect that they're not real sports fans. It's like the same thing that happens to female gamers or female fans of like superhero movies. You get this like, oh, but you don't really know about comic books because you're a girl thing.
Or you're here because Chris Hemsworth is shirtless.
Yeah. I mean, that's a nice bonus. But it's not movies.
Main reason. Obviously, women find Chris Hemsworth attractive, that's fine. I'm just saying, you don't know anything about Thor. You're just here because,
Yeah. It's offensive and annoying. I was asked one time if I was looking at a particular college because I was hoping to find a good husband. And wait, I just really? Turned around and walked out of the interview. Yeah. And I think he thought he was joking. Like, he was like, oh, you know, because it's a joke that you hear sometimes. Like, oh, girls just go to college to get their MRS degree. Yeah, well, I heard it in the 90s. Not that long ago. Yeah. And there's this, yeah, people say like, oh, that's where you go to get your MRS degree. Like, you know, you find a good husband and then, you know, it's very offensive. I did not go to that college, even though it was a family school that lots of my family go to. I was like, nope, nope.
Nice.
I'm not putting up with that garbage. Yeah. Anyway, Intelligentsia takes the credit for the interruption, right? They introduce themselves and say that it's them. There's the big logo of the Hulk King on the screen behind her. Yeah. And they showed on the screen, clearly stuff they copied from her phone, all of her matcher matches. I thought this was hilarious. Numerous photos of Captain America's butt. Just many of them. Because we know she's a fan. Captain America.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, Chris Evans is very attractive. That makes sense.
Yeah. Bank information. There was a cable bill, a bunch of her texts with different people, photos of herself, and of course the sex tape that Josh made.
She got doxxed. You know, that happens to a lot of women, like, especially in, like, you know, sports, gaming, sci-fi, science fiction communities where it's like, you don't belong here.
Yeah, it happens to gamer girls all the time. There's like, they just get death threats and stuff for having the nerve to like game video games. I was wondering if the whole gala was a setup to get her there, or if it was just an opportunity that Intelligentsia took advantage of. I don't know if it matters one way or the other.
Intelligentsia runs deep. I think this is like real life extremist groups where you know, I'm thinking about January 6th, you know, and I don't mean to get too political, but there are people, you know, being prosecuted for their participation in that event. And they're like, you know, successful real estate agents and attorneys and college professors. And you're like, whoa, like this movement is in different parts of our society. And I wonder if Intelligentsia is the same way. Like, are they respectable? Like, is one of the partners of GLA... K and H are one of the partners, a part of Intelligentsia, like, you know,
right? I don't know. We don't know. Politicians, and it's a very close analogy to exactly to like what's like the Proud Boys or whatever, like these groups in our country, you know, in real life that are fomenting hate and hate women. And I thought it was really interesting how she gets really angry and everybody gets really afraid. It's like they all of a sudden were like, oh, right, she's a Hulk. Like, she's not tame. She's not like, you know, some like watered down version of Hulk just because she's a woman. She's strong and a little bit scary when she's angry. Although way less destructive than Hulk in his heyday, right? Like,
I mean, the Hulk killed people.
Yeah,
granted,
she was under control.
It was by accident, but still, people died.
Yeah, I mean, she had enough of her control over herself when she grabbed that one masked Intelligentsia guy, and people were like, "Jen, don't do it, don't do it," and she put him down and let him go. Well, she could have easily killed him. I thought at first that might be Josh, but I went back and looked really carefully, and he definitely wasn't Josh. He looked more like Todd. He had like slightly wavy, so longer hair. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure it's Todd, but he looked like he could be Todd. He definitely wasn't Josh. Like, he had the wrong hair and the wrong eyes to be Josh. Yeah. She was really angry. And I think it's the first time the public has seen that anger. It's a throwback to, there's a comic book storyline where she loses her temper and, somebody like does something to her that makes her lose her ability to control She-Hulk's anger. Like, it's like magic or, you know, drugs or something. And she goes completely crazy and she destroys a lot of stuff and kills people. And then the comic book story picks up with her, like, once she's been healed from whatever it was that did that to her, like trying to like reintegrate her identity and, you know, come to terms with what happened and her guilt. And it's a deep story for She-Hulk, which is usually a pretty like silly comic book. But it's similar things that Hulk has had to deal with, right? Like the guilt that he has after he's hurt people and killed people. Yeah. She thought that she had it all under control, and then somebody takes the control away from her and it scared the hell out of her. It's a great All the She-Hulk comics. I never was a reader until I decided to do this podcast, and now I'm like a huge fan. Okay. I've been loving her comics. They're great.
That's good. I tried them and still couldn't get into
them. Yeah.
But I think Kirk said it last episode, you know, comics is a place where there's something for everyone, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's true. And there's so much out there. You don't have to like everything. Just go find another thing.
Yeah, nah. Intelligentsia, you don't have to like every Marvel hero. You just find a different hero. You could admire Daredevil's gold suit. Just do that.
It's not like one in, one out. It's not like, oh, there's a She-Hulk TV show. We're erasing Captain America movies. Like, that's not how it works. Like, you still have Iron Man and Captain America and Thor. Like, they're still out there.
Yeah, like, I mean, you said Captain Marvel was boring. So it's not like we're saying don't criticize movies you don't like. It's just don't go from that to, oh, that means all these other movies won't exist. It's like, no, it's not the Thanos snap.
Yeah.
Marvel's going to focus on everybody.
Which is like the point of Marvel is inclusiveness, right? Like there's so many times that Marvel comics have this theme of like the big tent, right? Like there's room for all kinds of people here. Like mutants, we don't care. Aliens, it's fine. Bring it on. And then for fans to be like, no, only white men is just ridiculous. It's like you missed the entire point.
I wonder if the Deadpool Wolverine news was for them to calm the intelligentsia sympathizers down.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm pretty sure they're sympathizers, people that aren't involved with their plans, but they kind of are like, maybe they had the right idea, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. And then Kevin Feige is like, hey guys, Deadpool Wolverine's happening, all right? Now, don't ally yourself with these people. Relax.
Yeah, seriously. Don't
be Deadpool Wolverine.
I only have one more note. What else do you have?
I have a list of things about Leapfrog that makes fun of like kind of the silly aspects of costume vigilantes.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and then I have a few random bits and bobs.
Let's hear about Leapfrog.
So I feel like She-Hulk is kind of poking fun at some cringy aspects of these like vigilante types. And I feel like now that we're in phase 4, Daredevil's not going to be the only one. Like, you know, I think we're going to be getting other ones, but I liked how She-Hulk is kind of poking a little bit of fun before, you know, we get, you know, Daredevil born again. So like jokes and quips during a fight, like, the store might be closed, but you forgot about the guard frog. It's like, why are you, like, sometimes it's like you shouldn't be quipping. Like, there's some situations you shouldn't be doing that. And it's funny because Leapfrog justified it. Well, I was trying to de-escalate the situation. Like, that was his rationalization for that.
It's and like it's you escalated kind of, it in the first place.
Yeah, these guys are just stealing something. You kicked them in the face, so... So it's just kind of poking fun at like suspension of disbelief explanations for these story elements. There's like criminals like waiting, like or the expectation that the criminal is supposed to wait for the attack to take place. So like, it's like there's like a little pause where the criminals were waiting, but then all of a sudden they just start kicking him while he's in the ground because it's like we're criminals, like. We don't want you to stop us, so yeah, we're gonna kick you. We're not gonna wait for you politely until you get up and engage in another attack. And he was just saying, you know, twisting toe jam, and I'm just like, no. But that, I mean, and then there's like, you know, going after petty criminals. They're like stealing a TV. They're not like trafficking women or doing anything like that. They're just stealing a TV, dude. Like, I think the police can handle that.
Yeah.
You know, engaging in flamboyant and self-absorbed behavior while fighting dangerous criminals. Like, why do you need to be flamboyant while you're fighting criminals? Just, like, detain them. Impractical suits and equipment. Enough said. We've talked about that.
Yeah.
And then just the fact that there's some fans that kind of downplay these aspects a little bit too much when they worship these types of superheroes. And then Nikki is just like, who's that guy in a devil costume doing a walk of shame on your street? Like, she just kind of is like, who's that guy? Like,
yeah.
But then you have these, you know, thousands of fans at cons that are like, oh my gosh, Daredevil's going to be brought into, you know, phase four. Yeah, he's amazing. And Nikki's just like, who's this clown? He's yeah. He's doing a walk of shame. And he's cute, though, from the bat. He's like,
yeah.
You know, it's just like, you know, so I thought that was funny and just kind of poking fun at Leapfrog.
Yeah. He is so a dork.
Some other notes I had was kind of just Holloway's attitude. I was like, huh, I wonder if this is a joke or if this is a thing in legal profession. And you're like, yeah, this is a thing in legal profession. Daredevil being in L.A., so he's kind of looked at differently.
Because mm-hmm.
in New York, he's a celebrated hero. Like, but in L.A., you know, it's like, who's this devil guy?
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I feel like a lot of these notes we already covered. I guess Pug, just his reaction to when that guy, the MC, was making that joke.
Mm-hmm.
That was my reaction. So I guess Pug is like my spirit animal or something.
Nice.
He's my variant. I guess I'm a variant of Pug. And then the joke that Mallory Book had, that's my final note. It was twice the work, half the recognition, and constantly being asked what it's like being a female lawyer. And then Nikki and Pug finger snapped. And I said, this is a better finger snap than Thanos. So
yeah. Yeah. They did. They gave her the snaps.
Yeah. Yeah, Mallory had a good point. I was like, yeah, facts. Yeah. You're right, Mallory.
And then she was up on the stage when Jen got angry and she's like, oh, Jen, don't do it. Like, Mallory always is right about things.
Yeah. It's true.
I love her. I know she and Jen are supposed to be sort of like frenemies, but I love Mallory. I think she's amazing.
I don't mind frenemies. Frenemies is good TV. She got me in season two. If there is one.
Yeah. So I think that's our main conversation, everybody. We're going to take a little break and we'll be back. There's more to come.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
And we're back. And we have some great listener feedback this week from Facebook. Bob Oakes says, did you catch it at the beginning? As Jen narrates the previously on, she says, previously on my show, instead of previously on She-Hulk. Loving that she is owning both sides of her. I think this episode, in retrospect, really showed that too. It was great to finally see some real classic superhero action on this show. I'm glad they gave us at least one episode like that before the finale. Great build-up for the finale. I'm looking forward to seeing how they end this.
Mike Mulcahy, I hope I got that right. Mike Mulcahy says, that walk of shame scene was everything. My girlfriend and I were laughing so hard, we had to pause the episode so we could get it all out of our system. That is a perfect example of why this show is so good. All the real raunchiness and awkwardness of real life, particularly if you're dating, wrapped up in a Marvel bow. Brilliant.
Thanks, Mike. Paik Allen says, did we really just get the classic Daredevil hallway scene? And a rooftop scene? Who knew I could be so giddy watching this show? Also, I am not mad about a She-Hulk and Daredevil hookup. They do have chemistry. You're not the only one feeling it, Jen.
Yeah, I agree. The chemistry was really good. I was happy with it.
Yeah.
Des Combs says, so I kind of teared up towards the end there. Oh, man. Yeah, Jen needs help.
She does. Greg. Hey, Greg. We miss you. He's off having life events. Nobody worry. He's fine. He says, finally, Matt Murdock, and in the best way, the courtroom, and then a shulky Daredevil fight, then team up. Awesome. Wish I could be on to talk about it. And if we thought the process server ending was a bummer, this was the worst. But the gala intro fourth wall break was phenomenal. And finally, an explanation of the difference between goons and henchmen. If I wasn't clear, I really liked this one.
Yeah, I'm with you, Greg. I mean, goons and henchmen, that's important differentiation that we need to get out there.
It is.
Cheryl Lowe says, love this episode. The difference between a goon and a henchman was hilarious. I agree. I love the Daredevil and She-Hulk together. Their banter was fantastic. I felt so sad at the end with her breaking the fourth wall with that sad pleading, what do I do now expression. I can't believe the season is almost over. I need more. I found this bit about Leapfrog interesting. And she has a wiki link to Leapfrog's, I guess, comic book backstory.
Yeah, I read through that and I mentioned some of the points earlier. Interestingly, he made his own suit in the comics, and then so Vincent, the father, made his own suit, and then his son picks it up when his father can no longer do it. But the father was a villain, and then the son is trying to be a hero.
Yeah, I feel like in the MCU, he's doing both really bad.
Yeah, it's true.
He's a terrible villain and a terrible hero.
Yeah. Karen Medeiros says, I loved this episode. She-Hulk smashing Daredevil's hallway fight and Matt's walk of shame were hilarious. At least we got some hallway fighting. Jen and Matt were so cute. Heart eyes emoji. I hope we get to see more of these two together. Looks like Jen needs to go back to Abomination Anger Management. Looking forward to the podcast.
Oh, wow. Mark Kirkman says, I really enjoyed this episode. We finally get Charlie Cox's Daredevil officially in the MCU. A different kind of Daredevil and Matt Murdock than we had in the Netflix series. We get an answer as to why Matt is in LA since he is from Hell's Kitchen, New York. I love the hero action in it. Plus that savage She-Hulk at the end of the episode. I'm looking forward to the finale.
So thanks for the feedback, guys.
I think about... Yeah. I'm sorry. Thank you for your feedback.
Oh, go ahead.
No, it's just when I hear Savage She-Hulk, I'm thinking about Megan Thee Stallion's song Savage. Like, I'm just thinking, like, is that going to play in the credits when we get to the end of the series? I don't know.
That would be nice. I like Megan Thee Stallion's music.
That song slaps. I'm not even a Megan Thee Stallion fan, but I like that song.
I think she's really cool. And we have one voicemail from Karen, my college friend.
Hi, Penny and Greg. I'm a little behind, but not too much. I wanted to comment about the retreat episode, and I wanted to say that I'm with Penny and hoping that Blonsky is, you know, actually a good guy. Maybe he's being used, and so because I think it changes that whole trope of, oh, he seems to be, you know, good now, but he's actually bad. And I'd love it if he just stayed good for the whole time. So we'll see what happens with that. I also wanted to mention that my almost 16-year-old daughter said to me that she thought it was cool that there was sort of a gender flip in the when they were sort of having their group session. And normally in movies and TV shows, it's a bunch of women giving relationship advice to a man. And we both really love that it was a bunch of men giving relationship advice to a woman, even if possibly it was, you know, for an evil intent. We really liked having that kind of turnaround, and we thought it was played really well. We enjoyed it. Yeah, so that's it. Bye.
Thanks, Karen. We love getting voicemails, you guys. And next week is the finale, so send in all your thoughts. Everything. We want to hear it. About the finale episode, about the series as a whole, about your hopes and dreams for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. All of it.
Feedback is great. I definitely am glad that we got some this week, and hopefully we get more, because this is the, like you said, this is the ending. Right at the cusp at the ending.
Last week's Marvel question of the week was to pick a signature song for your favorite MCU character. We didn't get a ton of answers, and I think maybe the question was a little bit confusing for people. The example I gave was I'm Every Woman by Whitney Houston for She-Hulk would be a good signature song for her. We got one response from Cheryl Lowe, and she suggested a few. Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree by Tony Orlando for Groot, which is hilarious. Rocket Man by Elton John for Rocket. Unstoppable by Sia for Lady Thor. And A Natural Woman for Nebula.
That Nebula one's interesting.
Yeah. Huh. I guess the Aretha Franklin version of that song. Okay. Or maybe the Carole King version. They're both good.
And then Greg had Shuri Royal by Lord. Actually, it is funny because she is royalty. Punisher, Big Gun by AC/DC. And then Scarlet Witch, Bring Me to Life by Evanescence, because Vision's dead.
Yeah. I love that song, Bring Me to Life by Evanescence. And when I saw Greg's comment, I was like, I have to play that song right now.
I like that song. I like that song. It's funny, though, because isn't the context of the song kind of fit Scarlet Witch, because she felt dead inside? Because Quicksilver died, and then Vision kind of brought her to life as the flashback the WandaVision showed.
Yeah. It's a great pick for Scarlet Witch. It really is. Do you have an entry?
I have two. So I was confused by the question because I thought it was referring to like musical moments within Marvel that are already established in the mm-hmm. Marvel universe. But now that I know, which song would fit a character, like a new song, I would say two answers that I have. One is It's Gonna Be Me by NSYNC, and that's gonna be for Bucky.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And I think Bucky should sing it to Sam Wilson, like he's, because the song is about a reliable friend wanting to, you know, be like acknowledged for their loyalty. Like, you know, I've been there for you all these years, and you don't, it's like you act like I don't exist, you know. And considering that Sam is still emotionally torn over Steve leaving, I feel like it's a good fit.
Yeah.
And then the other one I had was this is a hip hop song. It's not a big mainstream song, but it's New Africa by Sci-Hi the Prince, and it's just talking about this dream that he has of where Africa is the major power in the world, not the United States. And like all these public prominent African Americans have these like larger roles in society. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and it ends with a spoken word poem that I really like, that kind of, if like I can picture Wakanda, the splendor of Wakanda, when I hear the spoken word at the end of that song. So
that's a great choice.
Yeah.
I got on a little roll about this last night. I was trying to come up with one answer, and I came up with several. Okay. So the first one I thought of was Creep by Radiohead for Loki. Because he is kind of a creep.
Yeah.
Jump Around by House of Pain for Leapfrog.
That's a good one.
Like a Girl by Lizzo for Captain Marvel.
Okay, that makes sense.
Season of the Witch by Donovan for Agatha Harkness. Although I do like the It Was Agatha All Along song. It's pretty great.
Yeah, that song slaps.
Eye in the Sky by the Alan Parsons Project for Heimdall.
I never heard that song.
It's an old song. I think it's from the 70s. But just Eye in the Sky, it's about, like, somebody watching over everybody.
Oh, that's funny.
Moon Shadow by Cat Stevens for Moon Knight. The lyric is, I'm being followed by a moon shadow, which is kind of his life, right? Because the moon god is, you know, controlling him. And then Now That We Found Love by Heavy D and the Boys for Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that worked. That's perfect. Like, that one stands out. I mean, all of them were good ideas, but that one stands out. I just thought, oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, I also thought about I Believe I Can Fly by R. Kelly for Sam Wilson. And then I was like, no, R. Kelly, we're not doing that.
Yeah, we could. we could do Fly Like an Eagle.
Yeah, or On the Wings of Love. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of flying songs.
I thought of Man in the Mirror by Michael Jackson for Moon Knight.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Maybe that ends the series. You could have played that at the end of the series where Mark and Steven coexist peacefully.
Yeah. Oh, Moon Knight was so good.
But it's just how they communicate through a mirror. That's just like
Man in the Mirror would be really funny.
Yeah.
So our Marvel question of the week for next week, which will be our last one, is, now that we've gotten to see a She-Hulk Daredevil fight, who else would you like to see Jen fight, and who do you think would win?
So you're just gonna turn the whole chat into a bunch of 9-year-olds, because that's where we're going.
Yeah
that's all we have when we do these who gonna win in a fight questions.
Yep. I like fomenting inter-fan arguments on Facebook. I think it's funny.
I'm gonna cheat, and I want to see Wonder Woman and She-Hulk. Let's go. Wonder Woman,
She-Hulk. That would be cool.
Let's go. And I'm going for Wonder Woman. I'm biased. I'm biased.
Okay, then I'll read
Jen too, though.
Yeah. All right, everybody. That is our show. Thanks for listening, everyone.
If you'd like to get in touch or find out more about Podcastica, you can find all of our contact information at podcastica.com.
You can write in or record a voice message right there on podcastica.com, or find links to our social media pages and other shows, information about the Patreon group. There's lots of podcasts on there. We have so much content happening right now. We're so lucky to be nerds in 2022. And the podcasts that are coming out are fantastic. I'm really enjoying the House of the Dragon coverage on Dragoncast. And of course, The Walking Dead is back, and the Walking Dead cast has been really entertaining to listen to.
Yeah, for me, it's just been Walking Dead cast. I've been a little bit busy with other side projects in my regular job, but I'm hoping 2023, you know, because I know Jason, the Podfather, he has plans for 2023. So I'm hoping to listen to more content 2023. But right now, Walking Dead cast, you know, the old reliable. I love it. And I'm happy that Jason and Lucy and some other fun guests are they're taking us home to the ending of that show.
It's emotional, but it's very satisfying.
Yeah, it's like, I'm crying and laughing at the same time, basically.
Thank you so much, Rinaldi, for coming on the podcast and guest hosting with me and filling in for Greg. Everybody out there, I want to just remind you that Rinaldi's other podcast is called Marvelous Friends. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, and it's pretty entertaining, so I recommend it.
You can find it, you know, if you don't have Apple, you can find it any platform, Spotify, Stitcher, any platform. Yeah, strap in, because it's going to be a wild ride, a lot of fun. And next time on this podcast, She-Hulk Attorney at Law, Season 1, Episode 9, The Finale, title not yet released.
That's our show. Thanks for joining us.
Ribbit and rip it.
Yes, ribbit and rip it, indeed.